And welcome. This month I'm very excited because instead of me doing the presentation, we have a very special guest with us. The name of our talk this month is Holistic Dental Care, How to Avoid the Dentist Without Ignoring Your Teeth. And this topic came about because we get so many questions about fillings, root canals, various types and sundries of interventions with the dentist. And I am not the expert on dental care, but my dear friend Nadine Artemis is. She is the creator of a company called Living Libations, which makes an amazing line of essential oils, serums, elixirs, and things to take care of your teeth. She is the author of Holistic Dental Care, The Complete Guide to Healthy Teeth and Gums. And everybody that I've referred to that book absolutely loves it and is always quoting back to me various things that they've learned in that book. She's a frequent speaker. She speaks at the Longevity Conference where I got to meet her in person. She has written and had rave reviews in the New York Times, the National Post, the Hollywood Reporter. She was described by Alanis Morissette as a true sense visionary, and she is. I will just tell you off the side, the topic she talked about at the Longevity Conference was vitamin D. And vitamin D is a pretty technical kind of topic, and she kind of turned it into a poem, and everybody in the audience was sitting there rapt. So you're going to really love her presentation today. She's got an amazing set of little, you know, tinctures and essential oils and even topical things. I carry around her little tooth. She has a little tooth gum thing. It's perfect travel size. I carry it in my purse. If my teeth need a little help, I just rub it on my teeth and gums afterwards. So I could go on and on and on and tell you all about Nadine, but I really want to get to the heart of the topic and introduce Nadine. So thank you, Nadine, so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, we're excited. We're very excited. So let's just jump right in. Is that okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
So many of us have this mouthful of appliances and metals and plastics and other stuff because our teeth started rotting away in our mouths by the time we were 8 or 10 years old. And there's so many different materials and stuff in there. But the question always comes up for me is, like, why are our teeth so vulnerable?
Yes, that's a great question and a great place to start, because we've been trained and told in this culture to brush our teeth daily, to floss, and visit the dentist twice a year. But right now, there is more dental decay in our society than in any previous century. So the amount of cavities, crowns, root canals, and extractions really confirm that something is amiss with our current state of dental care. And even though right now we also seemingly have, you know, this plethora of periodontal promises, and we have like fluoride floss and hundreds of types of mouthwash and toothpaste and all these advances. And so I'm sure we're also all a bit wary because, you know, we've been roaming, you know, you can go into the drugstore and you're like, oh my God, there's aisles of this stuff. And, you know, I mean, sure, there's so many people that are very diligent about flossing and they maintain those ingrained appointments to visit the hygienist and the dentist. But again, we've got like bleeding gums are, you know, normal. 97% of the population has periodontal disease, which is another word for gum disease. Early childhood cavities are really out of control. And we've got millions upon millions of root canals performed every year. You know, we're in the year 2015, and we have a lot of modern dental technology. And we have a plethora of periodontal promises, which I like to call them. And that's like, you know, the aisles filled with mouthwashes and toothpaste that do this and that. And yet, there is the staggering number of cavities, crowns, root canals, and extractions. What seems to be the norm is that bleeding gums, cavities, millions of root canals are performed in North America every year. 97% of the population has periodontal disease, and early childhood cavities are out of control. So to me, I think our current state of dental care, I think of it as the definition of an insanity, which is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And that is how we are with our mouths right now. Because I'm sure There are many people that go to the hygienist and the dentist twice a year. They floss. They've been brushing their teeth daily for decades. And yet, you know, unexpected cavities form. They've got dental issues. So that's what I would love, you know, and I really feel like so much of our health starts in the mouth more than people may realize. And so we've got a few things converging here. And I think what really is this triple threat to our mouth is this combination of the harmful procedures, which we'll go into for sure on this call, the lack of understanding about how our mouths function, and this very important dentineal lymph fluid that we have in each tooth. And then we've got this sort of periodontal scorched earth policy on bacteria with our bodies and our mouths. And so this trifecta is the perfect periodontal storm that fosters this entropy, this endontic entropy in our mouths, this dental decay. And really what's going on is we have a system that settles for Band-Aid solutions of bleaching, gum grass, fillings, and veneers. So that trifecta is really this sort of toxic soup where everything converges to at the personal level where you're like, oh, I've got to have root canals and all this sort of stuff. So we're going to unpack all of that and really understand what to do if you've already had those procedures and how to prevent them if you haven't had those procedures yet. I like to also start, let's start wide and let's understand that our mouths are a microcosm that's a mirror for the macrocosm of imbalances that we have on our planet. So this dental dysbiosis that we're experiencing really reflects like a lack of symbiosis in our relationships to our bodies, to global food production, to medicine, and to the environment. So on a microscopic level, everything that's going on in our mouths is going on in the world. You know, we've got enamel and topsoil erosion. You know, we've got crumbling bones, mold in our homes, and we've got triclosan and toothpaste. We've got toxins everywhere, factory farms festering with fungi. You know, glyphosates are affecting our gums and our guts and our soil. You've got, you know, mercury in our mouths, mercury in our seas. And then we've got things like environmental allergens, carcinogens, and these pathogens that really threaten the borders of our body and our planet. So we really want to look at this, I mean, on a really deep holistic level. And when we understand that our mouth is this portal into our bodies, we can see how our mouths really interface and assimilate and absorb our relationship to the world. And so when we understand that our mouths are connected to our digestive, our endocrine, that's our hormonal system, and our immune system, we can just start connecting our mouths to the rest of our body. And then what's really revolutionary is the understanding of the mouth microbiome. So microbiome is the term for the colonies of trillions of microbes that live in our skin, in our guts, and in our mouths. And this microbiome enables endless essential body functions. And what's so revolutionary in the past decade about understanding the human microbiome is that this research reveals that our health depends on a thriving microbiome, and that we are, as people, are 90% microbial and actually only 10% mammalian. So really we have to start understanding that we're host to a bacterial banquet, and that the key to a healthy mouth and body is having bacterial balance. And so when we bring that back to the mouth, what we now know is that so many periodontal procedures, from root canals to mercury fillings to wisdom teeth extraction to cavity fillings, and the medicaments of modern dentistry, like the mouthwashes and the antibiotics and the triclosan and the toothpaste, all of those things mutate the mouth's microbes. And so what we've been told to do and trained to do, many of these oral care practices actually suppress our immunity, But what we need to start thinking about is reconciling with this bacterial community and thinking how we can sort of fluff the flora of our guts and mouths and befriend the bacteria. And part of that's going to be that we need to abandon those drugstore products, and we really need to look at what procedures we may need or may not need from the dentist so that we can stop mutating the mouth microbes and rebalance the oral ecology, which is really also what we really need to do on the planet, is really look at, you know, what we need to do for the soil and food production. And as you know, and I'm sure you talk about a lot, we really need to do that with our guts as well.
Right.
So that's all going on. That's like the microbiome component. And then what's really interesting too is just the profession of dentistry and how we've grown up in this culture to really, you know, if we've got a problem with our body, we go to the doctor, and if it's to do with the mouth, we go to the dentist. And we don't really know what's going on, and we really put our body in the health of another. And many times we're not really getting fully educated or fully informed about the procedures that need to happen. And also that comes from the dentist or the doctor doesn't necessarily know how all the body systems are hooking up together, you know, like.
Yeah.
But what's also really interesting, too, is we, you know, the white lab coat thing is like really, as a cultural symbol, something that we've, you know, really placed our bets on. But I like to bring up two journalistic, investigative journalistic stories that really show that it's not a black and white science. There was a researcher from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, that's like a major TV channel for us, the CBC, and she was armed with a dental assessment from the University of Toronto and a hidden camera, and she visited 20 dentists. Her mouth only needed a cleaning and a crown. That's when, a cavity replacement to a back molar. I mean, a filling replacement. And so if she had followed the combined recommendations of all those 20 dentists, then nearly every tooth in her mouth would have been treated, including unnecessary root canals, fillings, and crowns. So she only needed an old crown replaced and a cleaning, and she was told she would need root canals, fillings, and more crowns. So that's one story. That's a Canadian story. And then we've got another journalist from the States with a trusted confirmation that he only needed a molar crowned. So, again, he just needed another old molar recrowned. He traveled across the States for 50 dental examinations. All 50 dentists examined the same mouth and the same x-rays. Estimates range from $700 to $19,000, and the treatment plans range from crowning all 28 teeth to gum surgery. 15 of the 50 dentists missed the actual molar that needed a crown. So 15 of those dentists just didn't even see that, which is crazy. And when the ADA, the American Dental Association, was asked about this, they were not surprised by the inconsistencies, as they claim, and this is the quote, that dentistry is an art based on scientific knowledge. Yeah. So I don't know. I never went to the dentist, and he's like, I'm an artist. I'm going to do this too, but not, you know. So that's So sometimes, you know, when the dentist says you need a root canal, before we even look at alternatives to that, it's like, do you even need the root canal, right? So we have to really question it. And I really, you know, we're all going to need, well, not necessarily all of us, but, you know, there's going to be parts in your life where you may need a dentist. And it's so important to have the very best dentist. Like, this is like, I think what the journalists are revealing is that going to the dentist really can be monumental, and your 1 hour in that chair can create health issues that you're going to have to deal with and spend thousands of dollars on, and more hours, like, you know, even months to 5, 10, 15, 20 years later. So it seems really casual, but it's not. It's very serious. And then what also we can see is, you know, especially with insurance and different things, is that there's money to be minted from our mouths, and that may influence some dentists, and that dentistry does conjure these images of exact x-rays, sterile environments, lab coats, and this advanced scientific equipment, but it's really not this black and white situation. And I feel like, you know, we really, in our mind's eye, we see, like, x-ray, that's like, right? That's black and white. But really, yeah. I think these stories just help it. They can be read and interpreted differently, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's just keeping that in mind. And so, you know, it's really easy to feel exasperated by the whole system that's like, you know, has these faults in it. But I also think we can just sort of see this too as the crack where the light shines in, and we can go, oh, well, that's kind of cool that x-rays can be interpreted differently. And, you know, and we can, there's so many different ways to go into this problem. And so I think we can sort of look at that as sort of liberating, that the, you know, the inconsistencies can be liberating, and we don't have to like place all our bets on that. Right. And so what's really cool though, and really where all of my, you know, I am just a person, I do have teeth though, and I really want them to be healthy and happy. So that's what led me to all of this research. But where I get, you know, the leading edge information from is really from compassionate pioneering dentists who really understand how our bodies and mouths work, and that the dentists that are really in the know, they know that our mouths and our teeth are designed with something called a dentineal lymph fluid. And this dentineal lymph fluid acts like an invisible toothbrush, because of course our bodies were designed to function. We weren't like, just whatever designed us wasn't like, oh yeah, but they're going to need a toothbrush, you know, like to really make.
Right. Exactly. And we had a womb with one in your hand.
Yeah. And so this lymph, dentineal lymph, acts like an invisible toothbrush, and it repels cavities, and it actually builds new dentine from odontoblasts, which really just means like that inner core of your tooth can get renewed and remineralized and rebuilt. And what these pioneer dentists also know is that our mouth can be incubators of infection, and that we need to create sort of this, I like to think of it as a microbetopia for these microbes in our mouth.
Mm.
And that's what we need to know going forward.
So we create this amazing place where they just want to hang out and live and grow and reproduce.
Yeah, so we will, we're always going to have bacteria in our mouths, and we need bacteria in our mouths. So that sort of, you know, the 1940s, when they invented antibiotics, or that time frame of medical thinking, was like the germ warfare theory. But we're so past that, you know. In the 90s, we had this great exploration of the DNA, and that was like, right? Remember, that was like, oh my God, the DNA and the DNA helix strands and the genome. But now, really, with the past decade, give or take a few years, is we've got this revolutionary research on the human microbiome, and what now we're sort of living in a post-genomic era where we're really understanding that it's not really about our genes. It's about the microbiome, because, again, we're hosts to trillions of bacteria, and they have DNA, and their DNA outnumbers ours 100-fold or 150-fold. So it's really about their balance and health, and that's sort of where we can also bring in the epigenetic thoughts, right, where it's not really about the genes but about the environment, and our microbiome really is our environment. And there's more bacteria in a kiss than there are people on a planet, and that's okay.
Wow. Better be good bacteria.
Exactly. So, you know, and this relationship that we've had with the microbes are really so ancient and evolutionary. And just like a good host would provide a stable, loving home and nourishing food for their flora friends, in return, these microbes micromanage our bodies by digesting food and secreting beneficial biochemicals. And they're also so good for our immune system. They're like these sentient sentinels that strengthen our immunity, and they prevent pathogenic periodontal party crashers from proliferating and then colonizing our community. Because when the pathogens, so those are that's the not friendly bacteria, when they start to gain in numbers, when their population grows, what happens is they start colonizing. And that colonizing, then they're able to gain traction. And then they're able to start communicating. And the term for the communication of the pathogens is something called quorum sensing. That's quorum with a Q. Mm-hmm. And so through that quorum sensing, they're able to form biofilms. And so, like, normally pathogens, whether it's in our mouth or in our guts or rest of our body, normally pathogens, they exist in this free-floating planktonic state. But when they grow in numbers, that's when they're doing the gain the traction. They start doing quorum sensing. And the quorum sensing is how they coordinate group behavior and regulate the gene expression. And so a biofilm, because I think we know what biofilms are. That's basically plaque. Like, a biofilm can be on an arterial or in your intestines as well, but we're talking about the mouth. So the biofilm is a colony of densely packed microbes, and they adhere to internal surfaces like your teeth or your tongue, and they start to surround themselves with these sticky plaque secretions. And then these secretions form a barrier around the biofilm, and that barrier is impenetrable to antibiotics. And yet, how often are antibiotics prescribed for, you know, gum disease after you get your wisdom teeth out? And then the antibiotics, as many of you may know, start to mutate the microbe, and then we get antibiotic resistance. Mm-hmm. And that's screwing up our mouth. So everybody has the Streptococcus mutans bacteria in their mouth. That's like the strep throat bacteria. We have it at all times, so it's just about if the balance gets out of whack. And so what current research is showing is that Streptococcus mutans is maybe harmful because it might actually be missing some of its ancestral bacterial buddies. And so that's how, which brings us back to why are our mouths more vulnerable right now? Because we're actually missing microbes.
So how do we get rid of those microbes? Is that the
antibiotic? So that's a great question. It's the antibiotic thing. It's the glyphosates. I mean, so glyphosates are, you know, I'm not a GMO expert, but basically that's in your Roundup. And right. What companies that sell the glyphosates say is that, well, you know, it's like a really hardcore bug repellent, right? And so it's protecting, quote unquote, yeah, the herbicide, thanks, from the bacteria and the pests and that kind of stuff. And they say, well, it's not going to affect humans because we're not bugs. And humans don't have a shikimate pathway. And that's where it gets interesting and quite devastating because, no, we don't as a mammal. But the 90% of us that is bacteria, all those bacteria have that pathway. So glyphosates are so devastating to our gut health. And, you know, obviously the gut and the mouth are so connected. So really it's so messing with our microbiome. So that's one thing. Then we've got, antibiotics. Even if you've been, not taking antibiotic prescriptions because you know of the issues with antibiotics. The thing is, you know, we're still very much in a sort of antibiotic lifestyle. Unless if you're still having like food from the supermarket and tap water, then you're still getting antibiotics because they seep in through the water and the food supply. All antibiotics have their allowable limits in the food and water supply. Like milk can have up to 100 micrograms of tetracycline per kilo.
Whoa.
And what we now, yeah. And actually some scientists feel that the low daily dose of antibiotics, like that 100 micrograms in your in your milk, and not the capsules that you're taking for an illness, that actually might be even more dangerous, this low daily dose. And we know now that antibiotics are these indiscriminate bacterial assassins, right? Because they do all bacteria. They can't discriminate from the pathogens and the good bacteria. And the surviving bacteria, they mutate really quite quickly, and then they go into the empty niches that the antibiotics that were killed off, they make, and then that causes these pathogenic biofilms to bloom. So we've got the antibiotic issue, you know, the pesticide herbicide issue, and then we've got, So even if your grandmother had antibiotics, that's going to affect you. And there's a great book by Dr. Martin Blaser called Missing Microbes.
Yes,
and
that
really,
that
you know,
book.
Yeah, it's awesome. And he talks about too, which I was so surprised at, like the average American baby has had 3 courses of antibiotics by 2 years old, by age 10, 8 courses, by 20, 17, and by 40, 30 courses of antibiotics in total, which isn't including your water and food supply. So it's literally insane. And then on top of that, we have, you know, a proliferation of cesarean births. Generally, the rate should be at about 2%, and most, you know, in our culture, like North American culture, we were at about 50%, with some countries being 90%, like, and I might not be accurate with that, but like Brazil has an extremely high rate. So when you're born through cesarean, you're not getting that initial inoculation through the birth canal, which is very important. You're actually, you know, you go through the vagina has own amazing microbiome, which we can also talk about one day. But so you get that inoculation, literally it's like your starter culture. And then, you know, hopefully then you go on to breastfeeding where you're going to be getting more microbes. And then what's really neat, nobody could figure out for so long, like, why is breast milk so high in oligosaccharides, which is an indigestible starch? Well, as it turns out, that's a prebiotic. And so it's literally feeding the microbes that you got from the vaginal birth canal and making them grow. So it's food for the microbiome, not necessarily for the, you know, the body. Well, it's all connected, but you know what I mean? It's not like food for...
Right, exactly.
So all of those things combine to really create this absence of very essential microbes. And then we've got our modern dental procedures, which are also messing with the microbiome.
Wow.
Yeah.
The fluoride, is that one of them? The fluoride
thing? Oh, my gosh.
The fluoride in the water?
Yeah, so we've got fluoride. So fluoride is, oh, my God, fluoride is crazy. Yeah, we can go into, like, understanding how cavity, through this discussion, of fluoride and stuff, we can think about how cavities are formed. So fluoride is a serious subject, and it's in water, and then there's fluoride treatments and fluoride toothpaste. Literally, I don't think people understand the side effects of fluoride. And so I'm going to list them and just know that they're all documented. So I'm not making this up. Bleeding gums, dental fluorosis, sclerosis, dementia diagnosis, pitted and crumbled teeth, impaired myelin sheath, acne, arthritis, gingivitis, gastritis, disruptive collagen synthesis, bone crippling disease, joint pain in knees, thyroid disease, hip fractures, hyperactivity, damaged sperm motility, increased infertility, suppressed immune system, impaired glucose metabolism, damaged bone formation, cell mutation, DNA alteration, tooth discoloration, frequent urination, and reduced IQ. That's fluoride.
Okay. So that's fluoride. And now, so where does it come out that it strengthens teeth? Where do they get the idea that it prevents cavities?
Yeah. Well, that's such a knot of misinformation and stuff. I mean, the history, you can look up it online. Or like Mercola.com, he's done articles and there's books on it. But it's like... there were fault, you know, as with many things, somebody had a, you know, some group, not a person, but like I think it was the aluminum industry had a goal that they needed to get rid of, and I'm simplifying things, but they needed to get rid of the waste. And then these studies, which there was only one or two, and they were totally paid for by the industry. So that they're just those studies that we're all like referring to are outdated and false and had vested interests. That's the long and short of it. But it actually does. Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to, yeah, you go.
Yeah, I was going to say, even if it protected us from cavities, right? So let's just assume that that premise was correct, right? That fluoride treatments or fluoride in the water is going to prevent us from getting cavities. we have to look at everything as the dark side and the light side. So preventing cavities on the light side, and that whole long list of symptoms and disruptions on
yes.
the other side. So even if it were true, why would you even choose to do it? Because the bad outweighs the good.
Yeah, it so outweighs it. And really, there are so many studies that show it doesn't prevent cavities. And towns and areas with fluoride in the water have more cavities. So it's like so, you know, all the data is there. But the really simple way that I think about it is what it does is it actually makes bones weaker and skin or soft tissues stiffer. So that's why, especially with that collagen, the disruption of the collagen synthesis. So on one level, because of what teeth are made up of, it's like this crystalline structure, it does firm it up, but to a point of brittleness.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
that's, and then, you know, and then all our soft tissues, which we want soft, get stiff. So it just, that's, and that's really key. Like it's a real enzyme, as in like how the body functions disruptor. So what's
interesting,
you know,
what you just said, because a thought popped in my mind when you said that, it makes the bones more brittle and the soft tissue more stiff. Doesn't that sound like what we expect of normal aging?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, Lord.
Which we don't have to have that, I know.
Right, exactly.
So when we really look at like how we actually want to prevent cavities, what's really important to know is, well, how do they form? Because that theory, the acidogenic theory of sugar and acids on the teeth that form cavities, is also very outdated. And that also comes from the 1940s time. So we're going to show a slide of what happens, because it was to understand how a cavity forms, I want us to really understand how the teeth are connected to the rest of the body. So this slide shows the devastation that results from not understanding how our teeth are connected to the body, the bloodstream, and the lymph. And it's through this systemic connection that some medications and chemicals, like antibiotics and fluorides, contribute to brittle, discolored, even crumbling teeth, because it suppresses the dentineal lymph system, and that affects bone mineralization, microbial diversity, saliva pH, and our entire endocrine function. And the slide shows like the gray teeth you can get from tetracycline, the crumbling teeth that people experience from fluoroquinolone. I mean, imagine taking a dose of fluoroquinolone and then 6 months later your teeth are crumbling out of your mouth.
Oh, how awful.
Yeah, it wouldn't be fun at all. So what we want to understand, because you're not probably going to learn this from your dentist, although there are dentists that will know this, but I mean your average dentist, is that teeth are fed from their roots by the dentineal lymph system, and it's kind of like trees, that tree roots drawing up nutrients via the sap. So the dentineal lymph system is a toroidal system. That means that the lymph liquid flows inwards and upwards into the tooth core, and that's the other word for that is the pulp chamber, and out onto the enamel. So there's like, you know, there's another way into our teeth, and we all know that our teeth have roots. And then, like microscopic sweat, these tiny droplets of the dentineal lymph fluid coalesce on the surface of the enamel, and that forms a fluid layer, and that prevents, that's one of the ways to prevent biofilm formation. And then the fluid, the dentineal lymph fluid, co-mingles with the saliva, and then that further lubricates and communicates with the entire mouth and the mouth microbiome. So when the dentineal lymph system is properly metabolized and functional, it acts like what I like to call this invisible toothbrush, because it prevents the penetration of pathogens into the tooth, and it prevents decay. But this dentineal lymph system can stagnate and actually fully reverse. So the dentineal lymph is affected by diet and hormones. Those are the activators of this self-cleansing system.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, certain chemicals and medication and a diet of processed food, sugar and carbohydrates, all that stuff, that can spike our insulin levels, which means spiking our blood sugar levels. And that of course disharmonizes hormones. So when the dentist, Dr. Ralph Steinman, went, he was like, I am sure there's a dentineal lymph system. This was back in the 60s. He was a dentist. And then he just dedicated the rest of his life to figuring out the dentineal lymph system. When he figured it out and he proved it with X-ray dye, so it could actually show up in the body. So with the X-ray dye, you know, it would take an hour to get to the teeth. And then interestingly, it took 6 minutes to get from the stomach up to the tooth. And then it took an hour to get from the tooth inner core just to the enamel, which is like millimeters away. So that's fascinating to me. But he was like, I need to know what's making this system work. So he hooked up with an endocrinologist, Dr. John Leonora, to figure out like what's making this function. And what they found out, of course, it goes back to the hormonal system, back to the hypothalamus, kind of like I feel like everything goes back to the hypothalamus. It's like the
hypothalamus,
grand.
Yep.
Yeah, good old hypothalamus.
Yeah,
so
the controller.
And the parotid. That's right. It's like the CEO. So then it communicates to the parotid glands, and those are just behind the TMJ joint, mm-hmm. you know, before we go down into the throat. So kind of by the ear, jaw, but behind that. So that communicates to that, and then that sends out these secretions throughout the body. And so when we have spikes in blood sugar and or certain chemicals, that causes the dentineal lymph system to either stagnate, like slow down, or just totally reverse. And when that happens, the capillaries in the tooth suck in bacteria like a straw from the mouth. And then if the mouth's all pathogenic and, you know, off balance, then we're drawing in that bacteria into the tooth. And then that can cause infection and biofilm formation in the pulp chamber and then into these dentin tubules, which are these microscopic dentin tubules that each tooth, if we laid out the dentin tubules in each molar, they would, if we laid them out all together, it would be over 3 miles of microscopic dentin tubules in each tooth. This is so
Whoa.
Intricate, the system. Yeah, each tooth over 3 miles. And so then the system that was self-cleansing actually becomes self-contaminating. And I like to think of that as sort of then we've got this leaky tooth. And that's the genesis of how cavities are created. And what we also need to understand is that a cavity is an infection in the tooth, plain and simple. It's an infection. And then what's good to know about that is like all wounds, it has the ability to heal because our teeth are alive and connected to the rest of our body. So what's good to know is that the current condition of our teeth, it can evolve. We can change things. It's not like this. Then, you know, this like, you know, stuck sort of diagnosis. So Dr. Steinman, that's the dentist who scientifically proved the dentineal lymph system. He showed that including dietary magnesium and phosphorus reduced the decay rate by 86%.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, I mean, that's huge. That's a really good, you know, anything that's doing 86% is a good percentage. And then Dr. Melvin Page, he was another dentist, he was a doctor. But he confirmed that cavities begin to form when phosphorus blood serum levels drop below 3.5. And then, so that was just interesting because then the other, Dr. Simons found that we have to add in phosphorus. And then he actually pinned it down to like a phosphorus blood serum level. Cavities begin to form right when it drops at that point. And then Dr. Weston Price, he was a former president of the American Dental Association in the 1930s. And he found that fat-soluble vitamins of K2 and D3 actually reversed decay. And, of course, inhibited decay. So we've got minerals and fat-soluble vitamins able to reverse decay. And what we need to know is that our system right now of fillings are really this Band-Aid solution. And any filling is susceptible to recurrent decay. That's how you get into a situation where you need a crown. Usually it's a cavity first, and there's a lot of decay, you get a filling. Then, you know, 10 years later, that filling, there's more decay underneath, and then you need a full-on crown. And so more of the tooth gets drilled away, and a crown, sort of like a cap, is put on top of the tooth. And so because none of the underlying causes that of a cavity have been addressed in this current situation that we have. But if the dentineal lymph system is restored, and that starts working for you, and then you're also able to absorb the nutrients that you're putting in, and those, including those nutrients in your diet, will help you get that dentineal lymph system happening again, then teeth do remineralize. And what's really interesting too is if you haven't had a filling, but you've started to get a brown lesion on the tooth, you know, doing these things, your tooth can remineralize, and that patch won't become sticky and, you know, gooey anymore. It actually seals up on its own. It might not be perfectly white anymore, but that spot is stronger to decay. So it becomes more resilient. It's kind of like a tree. You get the sap. If there's a wound in the tree, the sap comes out and starts to protect the tooth. Also, when we have those areas of decay in our mouth, you know, if the body is working correctly, then the body will send more saliva and more dentineal fluid to that area in its attempt to clear up the infection.
This is fascinating, Nadine. So many questions are coming up for me. Is it okay if I ask you a few of those? Because I'm sure it's coming
yes.
up for our listeners as well. So one of the questions is about the lymph that's going on the teeth, right? It's coming out and it's coating the teeth. What happens when we brush it away, especially when we use some of these, you know, heavy-duty brushes? And does it brush it away or...
Because it takes
an hour to go from the inside to the outside, and we brush it away, it's going to take another hour for this stuff to come back out.
Well, it's one of the reasons why I suggest you don't want to brush right after you eat. Like, I think that's been one of the sort of rules of dentistry, not a hardcore one, but you kind of want to let the whole body settle and remineralize, and you know what I mean? And especially if you had a grapefruit, it's not the right time to brush. But really, this is happening all the time, like the dentineal lymph system and the remineralizing of the teeth, if you're eating the right things, right? The bones, whether it's your tooth or your femur, it's constantly being remineralized. Like the bones aren't, right. I think we have this idea too that the bone is just this static, it's built, right? We're past 20s, there's our bone. But it's like all the time being remineralized or not, and then, you know, hopefully it is, but then if it's not, that's when you could be looking at osteoporosis later on or bone issues or more susceptibility to fractures. Or really if you have issues with your teeth, like not the gum, but the tooth itself, it's like it's a mirror into the health of your bone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't be afraid of brushing, but we shouldn't do it, right? We should wait an hour or so after eating rather than doing it immediately after eating.
Yes. Yep.
Then the other question that came up is the curiosity about phosphorus, because my understanding is that we a lot of people have way too much phosphorus because they throw off the phosphorus-calcium ratios by drinking soft drinks and eating a lot of meat, which is high in phosphorus. So it's just curious to me that low phosphorus would be an issue for anybody.
Yeah, well, I mean, those are kind of different phosphorus issues that throw it off. And, like, we have a whole, like, the sort of the whole phosphorus fertilizer industry, right? That whole thing is, like, it's a type of phosphorus, but not the type that's, like, a good, healthy mineral. But those types of phosphorus increase, they come with, like, a phytic acid issue. And so a phytic acid is an anti-nutrient. And that mm-hmm. will deplete the true
Bleach.
Phosphorus from our body.
Oh. Okay.
And that's where you need, with nuts and seeds and grains, we need to soak and ferment to get rid of the phytic acid.
Mm-hmm.
And not eat, you know, fake fertilized food and soft drinks and that kind of stuff.
Got it. That makes sense. That makes sense. Cool.
And then with the fat-soluble vitamins, the thing that's really important about the fat-soluble, and, you know, of course, you know, we separate one thing to understand it, but then we always have to bring it back, right? Like, we have to understand how it's all going to work together. So the key thing about the fat-soluble vitamins, K2 and D3, so D3 you can get from the sun, and then K2 is, you know, there's K1 is in your leafy greens, but K2 can only come from a fat-soluble thing. So you can supplement it if you're vegan, or well, vegan's really the only one that has to supplement it, or you might need to supplement it to get it back up. And it comes from natto, which is a fermented soy. So
right.
the supplement is
right.
really good. And then if you're vegan or vegetarian or paleo or whatever else we have, you're okay as long as you're eating true, you know, real food. That, so that if you're eating an egg or having butter or cheese, that it's come from a animal that has eaten grass, because it's kind of another sunshine vitamin, but it's not direct. It's because from the grass we get the K2, and then it's digested by the animal, and then their egg or their butter or their cheese is very high in K2, and that's where you get the golden orange yolks instead of a pale yellow. That
mm-hmm.
adds that color to the food. And why they're so important, and also it's very important if you're taking D3 as a supplement to add K2 to it. Because if you just take the D3 and not the K2, you can, you know, that goes, lays into wrinkles for one thing, which none of us want. So it's very important to take them together. And what they do is this catalytic reaction, and they usher the minerals into the bones.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're just taking magnesium and phosphorus but no fat solubles, or calcium without the fat solubles, then the minerals stay in our blood serum and not in the bone. And so the fat solubles are like just saying, like they just take them into the bone. And that's the key of that relationship.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thanks for the clarification. So
oh, yeah.
we've talked a whole lot about, you know, how these things happen. And it seems to me that the bottom line is that the dental issues that we're having are coming from disaltered microbiomes, and the underlying cause of the disaltered microbiome is, you know, poor diet, the exposure to antibiotics and glyphosates and all kinds of other things that are disrupting our microbiome. So when we want to get back and talk about how do we actually then protect ourselves from this harm, and what are some of the things mm-hmm. that we can do to, if we already have cavities, you already talked about a few things, but if you already have cavities, I'm assuming if you already had them filled, that once that toothpiece is drilled away, that it can't come back. But I'd love
yeah.
to hear more of your thoughts on what do we do to prevent it, number one, or reverse the cavities is great, but what about those of us who have, like, I have two bridges and a whole bunch of stuff, and I had all this stuff done before I even discovered that my diet was a part of anything related to health.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, I know so many of us really, yeah, we have to catch up on the previous dental procedures. So what we can do, we can go into some of the harmful dental procedures, and then we can go into, like, the solutions if you
Great.
Want.
Awesome.
'Cause I think,
yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So the three main ones that we can look at are wisdom teeth extractions, root canals, and silver fillings, because I think those are pretty big. So root canal is that's a procedure for an infected tooth, and so it kills the tooth by removing its internal structure. That's the whole inside, the nerves, the pulp, and the blood vessels. That's hollowed out and then rinsed, and then it's filled with latex and cement and then topped with a crown. So the whole purpose of a root canal is to just hermetically seal the tooth and save the chewing surface. So that seems like a good idea because nobody wants to lose a tooth, right? But clinically, it's a bacterial horror story. And a dead tooth remains in the mouth, and then this dead tooth is an incubator infection, and it becomes this bacterial breeding ground for pathogens to grow and spread. And then you've got this oxygen-starved, stagnant tooth, and that becomes a haven for harmful microbes. So the goal to have this non-infected sterile tooth, that's sort of the fantasy of what they were trying to do, but the exact opposite is created. And remember we talked about each tooth having 3 miles of microscopic dentin tubules? Well, those are completely impossible to sterilize. And that's the whole myth of root canal sterility. And this is actually being discussed in Odonto journals today. Which is like basically the magazine for root canals and that whole discussion, but that information is just not filtering down. So we're actually at a time now where some facets of the dental industry are like, oh, yeah, it's not sterile at all.
And so, but your normal dentist might not know that information yet. So, and then even when you're chewing with the root canal surface, all that bacterial toxins can squirt into the bloodstream. And so you've got an anaerobic infection, and then that can spread to the gums, ligaments, jawbone, all that kind of stuff. And but you now have no nerves in that tooth, so there'll be no pain to indicate that you have an infection. One of my favorite dentists, Dr. Yeah, that's a bit of an issue. So what they're Dr. Nunnally is a favorite dentist of mine in Texas, and
he's very close to me.
Yeah,
he's right in my area.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Oh my God, if you ever need a dentist. So he's the one. Now, so they do, like, restorative dentistry. So if you have sort of this quagmire of previous dental stuff in your mouth, you really need the right dentist. So if I say, like, remove your mercury filling, don't necessarily just go to your same dentist and do that. So what he did, though, is he conducted tests on root canal teeth. And to qualify the teeth, so these were people that wanted to remove their root canal, but not for any issue. They just had learned that it's not a good idea to have one. And the teeth had to be symptom-free and show zero signs of pathology on an x-ray, right? So they had to be, like, on an x-ray, perfect. They had to show no discomfort for the person, and they had to be textbook perfect before they could be used in the study. And those teeth were examined by independent dentists to qualify for the study. So it was a very good study. And what they found is that all the root canal teeth had severe toxic pathogens. And it's interesting, too, because they were finding old diseases in there as well, like syphilis, leprosy, Lyme disease.
Wow.
So there's also other theories that it might not all be coming from tick bites, but that's a whole other story. So anyway, so what he's showing is the root canal may be fine in your mouth, but it is a harbor for these harmful microbes. Now, that doesn't mean you can't handle it, right? So then some people might be living very healthy and well, and they're okay with it. And again, that's where the genes come in or the microbiome, and it's like you're okay. But then somebody else with a different gene system or different immune issues, or they're eating standard American diet, that root canal could be eroding away at their health, and yet they don't know. They are just, you know, they're having a downturn in health. They're having autoimmune issues, rheumatoid arthritis, can't make the connections. So that's when you might have to assess, right? If you're like, you know, maybe you're okay with it. And, you know, I think stem cells are 5 years away from totally regrowing a new tooth, you might wait. So it's not like upon hearing this, everybody needs to have their root canals extracted. But it's just something to think about in the sum total of your health,
right?
If that's an issue. And if you do need it removed, then it does need to be removed properly, which can bring us to our next topic of wisdom teeth extraction. Which is huge, right? Like, who hasn't had their wisdom teeth extracted?
I mean, everybody, right?
Well, yeah, totally. So what, in the American Journal of Public Health, they now say that 6.7 million out of 10 million root canal extractions, preventative root canal extractions, were deemed unnecessary.
Wow.
So, and then in Britain, they have stated that the practice of prophylactic removal of pathology-free, as in, you know, some disease-free impacted wisdom teeth, should be discontinued. So when you're 16, 17, 18, 20, and the dentist says, okay, well, we're just going to remove them so they're not a problem later in life.
Yeah.
No, we don't, you know, we're not doing that anymore. Because, you know, you could use that. Like, for example, you have a bridge, you know, if it was your very last tooth that was you know, the problem, and you need a bridge, you could be using that wisdom tooth for part of the bridge, for example. You may need a chewing surface when you're 100 years old. So we may need to keep them. They could come in handy. And then also when we do things like that, we're altering the structure of our jaw, you know, the occipital ridge, how the teeth are fitting together. But then the biggest issue is that multiple pathological bacteria have been found in over 90% of wisdom teeth extraction sites. So those spaces where our wisdom teeth once were, when they go into that pocket, they're finding 90% of all wisdom teeth sites have this bacteria.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's because the standard protocol is to leave in something called the periodontal ligament. after the extraction. And Dr. Hal Huggins told me once, kind of a not pretty metaphor, but he said it's like leaving the placenta in after giving birth. So you're leaving this thing in your body that's rotting.
Yeah.
And that's, I know, it's gross. So then that's...
Is there anything you can do after the fact? Do they go in and remove it again?
Yeah, so I can talk. So it's called an osteonecrotic lesion, also known as a jaw cavitation. And so a cavity is in the tooth and a cavitation is in the jaw. And basically it's a sluggish area of bone marrow where this virulent bacteria now gather, and they're eating away at your jawbone. So, and then that can lead to autoimmune issues, which is what the studies have shown. So what they can do is, and again, you're going to need a biological holistic dentist. And you're also, I do have an article on our site that's like questions to ask your biological dentist. So now you've found a good dentist, you have to ask, because I've definitely been to like holistic quote unquote dentists where they, I didn't know, like maybe they don't do fluoride and maybe they don't promote mercury dent-free, you know, mercury fillings, but then they just, and they give you carrot juice and then your tube of Crest toothpaste. And it's all very normal, you know. So you really have to investigate. And sometimes, people fly into Dr. Nanalli from all over the world. And sometimes that's required because it's really one of the, you know, one of the top things we can do for our health. Or if there's something not going right, you might want to look in the mouth first and work with the mouth. Because if you haven't taken care of that, some of your efforts might be a bit uphill. And so what they'll do to check for a cavitation, because they don't show up on an x-ray, and if they do show up on an x-ray, it might be already 50% eroded. So they just take a small, they have tiny tools, so they'll make a small incision in the gum of the extraction site, and they'll examine for a mushy pocket. So if their tool sinks in, that's a sign of decay. And so then they just open it up, and I mean, the tooth's already gone, so I mean, the sad part is like they're already gone. So they'll open it up and then they scrape the decay off the bone. The bacteria is thoroughly removed and then a blood clot forms, which is a good thing. And that reestablishes blood flow back to the area. And then hopefully you're working with a dentist that's going to inject that area with ozone. And even better, I hope that you can find a dentist that works with PRP or PRF, which is platelet-rich plasma, which they will take a little bit of blood from you, spin it around in something. Maybe you know what that's called. They spin it, and it separates the plasma. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
So they separate the blood and the plasma, and you get this beautiful golden liquid, and then that's injected into your area. And then over the next six months, your body will bring in all the juicy things it needs to heal that site. So that's a really on it dentist. Yeah. And then that heals the area. So it's a very important thing to do, you know, at some point to have those sites checked. And so that's why I say, if you are going to have your root canal removed, you don't just want somebody to just extract it because they're going to leave in that periodontal ligament.
Yes.
And if they're extracting your wisdom teeth, why not have the PRP and ozone injected into that as well?
At the time, yep.
Because there's often a jaw rot issue below a root canal as well. And so, and you can hopefully also you can see now how these procedures are messing with the microbiome because they become these necrotic areas and there's these little bacteria, pathogenic bacteria factories in our mouths. And then that's, you know, even though it's in the jaw or in a pocket or that, I mean, obviously it's communicating to the rest of the mouth. It goes into the bloodstream and you know, things can't get to it to clean it out. So it's like this really tight little pocket that things can't get in to clear it out, and yet things can come out into our body and seep into our bloodstream.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then mercury filling.
This is all making so much sense.
Yeah, now it all makes sense. And then mercury, obviously, I mean, you know, this It's mercury, and they're called. I remember I was something on TV once, and they were talking about this briefly, and they were talking about mercury fillings. He's like, but it's so insane. Like, we have mercury put into our heads, and somebody's like, no, I have silver fillings, and I'm like, you have mercury fillings. So it's a nice name for silver fillings is mercury fillings. They're approximately 50% mercury, and they changed it a bit in the 70s, and they actually add more copper, which actually made it worse. And there's a whole thing on galvanic currents and stuff, which is too technical for me, but it makes a lot of sense. I just can't describe it too much. But we get these currents in our mouths, and there's a good article on Dr. Lena Garcia's website that can explain that. So even when mercury fillings are removed, you need to work with, again, not just a dentist who's like, oh, yeah, I'll do it, because that's a job, you know, that's going to give money. But you need somebody that's actually the proper procedure besides air filters and vitamin C drips and dental dams and all these things, because, again, there's mercury, they're releasing vapor all the time, is they have to do certain, like, one side of the mouth first and in a certain order because of the currents that the mercury fillings create in the mouth.
Right.
So
right.
Mercury is a cumulative. Oh, yeah, that's like, you know, they want to make sure that they've been trained by Dr. Hal Huggins and stuff. So, you know, and mercury is a cumulative toxin. It binds to the tissues. It alters DNA and nerves and cell membranes. It's been linked to dementia and Parkinson's. You know, it creates periodontal disease, receding gums, leaky gut. It throws off our gut balance. It can also create things like skin hyperpigmentation, so the brown spots that can be on the face. It's hooked up to everything. And even if you had your mercury fillings put in like 40 years ago, the mercury fillings release vapor 24 hours a day, like even 40 years later. But there's a 500% increase in mercury vapor release when chewing, teeth grinding, and drinking hot fluids.
Oh, lovely. What
so it's insane. I know. And then this is a crazy stat. Four fillings, if you've got your mercury fillings removed and you toss them into a 20-acre lake, that lake would be unfit for fishing and swimming. The EPA would have to say, you can't swim in that lake. But somehow it's okay to put in our head.
But we have this okay in the mouth.
Oh, no, it's so crazy. Oh, it's crazy.
And it's
so that's
man.
Yeah, and that is definitely something like, you know, you got to think about the root canal removal and that kind of stuff. But I definitely, you know, when you feel like you're ready, like, I would definitely recommend removing mercury fillings, again, with the proper people. Because then also, what are you going to refill them with? You want to work with a dentist that's going to look for biocompatible materials. So what you want your good dentist to do is to do a blood serum test, and then they'll see what dental materials are compatible for your immune system.
Yep.
Because no matter how clean it is, it's still not, you know, it's not part of your body. So there's going to be a bit of an immune issue. And porcelain fillings are not 100% pure. They contain nickel and aluminum. And white composite fillings contain aluminum and nickel. And nickel is like a top carcinogen, which we can talk about. It's like in braces and everything too. I have an article on braces, and my book has a chapter on braces, because braces are a big issue. And they actually make the face grow differently. It's all on the website. So then you've got your white
And would you give people right now, just give people the website where they can find that. So,
livinglibations.com is my website for everything. And then you can look under articles, like dental care articles. I've got the braces article up there. And you can always email us with questions too. So then you've got composite fillings, and those are plastic. It's got BPA and formaldehyde and aluminum. So you definitely need a good dentist that's in tune with, like, where to get better dental materials. So there's some good filling choices right now with zirconium oxide. There's ceramic resins. And there are non-drilling techniques. And depending on the depth of the decay, again, you can, you know, you can still work on reversing it. Like, you know, so don't forget there's that option as well. But there's also lasers that can clean up. There's a lot going on, but if you're not working with a top dentist, you're not going to be even given those choices.
Right. And I will just step in and say that there are a lot of quote-unquote biological dentists who seem on the surface to know what they're doing because they'll use the rubber damming when they're taking out the mercury filling. They don't put in any more mercury filling. But all these little finer points are what can make or break the success of that process. And I know personally back, I think it was 20 years ago, I had all my mercury removed by a biological dentist who I, trusted at the time. He did the rubber damming and all that, but he put in composites, right?
And
so then years later, I was like, oh, I want all those composites out. So I went to another biological dentist here. And they took those out and were kind of arguing with me about wanting ceramic because the ceramic is hard and it's going to hurt the teeth below it. But I was insistent. And then, you know, replaced various and sundry things, and I had bridges. I mean, it was just all this awful stuff. By the time I was 20, every one of my teeth was filled. But the point is, when I look at that, you know, I have a couple of the root canals, don't know anything, didn't know anything about the ligament, right? Don't know if that was there.
Yeah.
And then as I look at some of these bridges that are supposed to be all porcelain or ceramic, and they start to wear down, there's a sign of some sort of dark metal under there.
Oh, so, he may not have removed it. Because people
will find out
with crowns. They'll get a crown removed from their, like, if they're doing sort of dental revision, and then the dentist finds, like, full-on mercury underneath the crown because they didn't remove it before they put the crown on, which is just so sloppy.
You would think that they would because these were biological dentists. But the reason I bring this up is a caution to really educate yourself about this. You know, get Canadian's book, check out the articles, and really educate yourself because you can't just trust because they use the rubber dams and they don't put mercury back in that they actually have the depth of knowledge.
Yeah,
and
for sure. And you don't want to be arguing
with
your dentist. You want to be like, yeah, let's do this.
Right, and they get really upset when you know more than they do. So, and if they do, then it's time to find another dentist that knows more than you do, right? You don't want to go to somebody who's the expert and you know more than them.
Yeah, and you don't want to be, it's not our job to educate. I mean, you know, if you have to really educate on this stuff, it's not our job. It's nice, but you need them to be so in-depth.
Right. Because there's so many little things like this, the pockets, things. I mean, it's scary what you said about the fact that those people that they chose for the study did not have any sign of pain. There was everything seemed on the surface to be perfectly normal, yet they were swimming with bacteria. So the thing
100%.
Is that I don't want to leave people with gloom and doom, right? Like, oh, my God, my mouth is a sewage pit. It's
going
to kill me. And I want to talk about really how to empower people to take charge and what we can do to prevent, first of all, obviously, any of the good teeth that are still remaining in your mouth. You want to protect them. And then what do you do about the things that are brewing? You know, and I will tell one other story. A couple of years ago, I had this intense pain. And it was in a site of an old root canal, crown or something. It was some other dental stuff in there. It was just so intense. I mean, and I tolerate pain really well, and I was trying everything I could, and I finally went in to get it checked out. And, you know, it was like, oh, you need this, and this is a cavitation, and this, and go to this periodontist here, and go to this here. And I was just feeling really frustrated. So I decided that I wasn't going to do any of that. I was just going to up my dental care, and I'd gotten some of your stuff, and I was using some of the herbs and stuff and flossing, but I decided that I was just going to self-inject with vitamin C and clove and all this other stuff. Got the pain under control, and I haven't done anything since. But the point is that whatever that was, it cleared itself out because I don't have the intense pain and I don't have the tenderness, yet I know that there's probably still some things brewing there that need to be addressed. So
well, that's a good thing.
I
mean, pain is the indicator, and you reminded me of like a thing with my wisdom teeth. So I had three out around 20, and the other one didn't come in yet. And then I'm in my 30s, and I had given birth, and I'm breastfeeding. So I think it's like first year in, and I have this crazy pain in my jaw. And turns out the fourth wisdom teeth was there. I just didn't know. And so I had to go to just the normal dentist in town because we live way out in the woods. So I just had to go to normal. And just to get the diagnosis, what's going on? He's like, you have your wisdom teeth. And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even know. And it wasn't totally growing in normally. So it needed extra care, and I wasn't giving it because I didn't really know it was there. So it was like sort of gummy, you know, there's like it's not all the way up like a normal tooth. And so he's like, you're going to have to get that removed. And that was before I was fully educated on root canal, I mean, wisdom teeth as well. So I go to the other dentist to do, you know, the specialized dentist, and I just wanted to have local anesthetic because I was breastfeeding. And even that was like a big debate for my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then he looked at it and he's like, oh, actually, it's because of how it's growing in, you need general anesthetic. And I was like, oh, my God, well, that's not happening. So he's like, well, take this hydrogen peroxide and just rinse it at least and whatever. And so I'm like, okay. So I go home, I rinse it with hydrogen peroxide. The pain never came back.
Whoa.
So it was literally because I wasn't attending to it. Then finally, about 2 months after that, I had a normal appointment at my actual holistic dentist in Toronto. And I said, okay, it's all under control now. It's clean. I know it exists. Do I have to remove it? Because it's not growing in perfectly. And they're like, no, you can keep it. And so that was good to hear. And it's totally fine. You know,
so
again,
it
doesn't mean not everything means that, you know, it's like this big dental emergency. I mean, there definitely are dental emergencies, but just like you may have dealt with part of the problem. You may have had, like, not every infection is at the nerve, and not every infection leads to a root canal. You know, so just things for us to think about. So what I liked, there's 8 steps that I have that you can also get on our website. It will take you through it. So I've got the 8 steps that can turn a lot of things around. And it's also what I recommend before you go, even for a cleaning, do 3 months of the 8 steps. You will have a shorter, better, happier, less expensive appointment. And, you know, every day we get emails like, oh, my God, my hygienist wants to know what I'm doing. And, like, you know, they don't really get it. So, and then from the stuff we've talked about today, I have 3 simple things that you can think about, which is stop, seal, and seed. And so from that, I've got very practical steps that we can all take. So for the stop, you want to stop anything that's suppressing the dentineal lymph. So processed food, sugar, chemicals that are inhibiting endocrine dysfunction. You want to stop spiking the blood sugar and creating insulin resistance. You know, and a really ideal blood sugar level is around 80, and that's just great for all health, because all disease really is, it's the beginning is inflammation, right? And then you want to look at.
I teach blood sugar all the time, and I teach people about managing it and all the other reasons. And the dental, I'll just add that to my dental thing. And we teach that
it's
80, you know, 75 to 80 is a good fasting blood sugar. And it should never go above 110, no matter what you eat. It should never go above 110, ideally, never above 100. And so eat so that it keeps your blood sugar in those ranges.
Absolutely. And you'll be so healthy. You know, when you're living 75 to 80, you're on top of your health. So, and then you want to stop mouth breathing, you know, especially children, their teeth literally will be like, it will add to crooked teeth if they're mouth breathing. So you want to look at medications that are drying out the mouth, sinuses, you know, cranial balance. You may need some osteopathy, that kind of stuff. You want to heal and seal leaky gut. So how we have leaky gums, I think of bleeding gums as leaky guts. And so to do that, you may need to eliminate things that are irritating your intestines and guts, like gluten, corn, and glyphosate. You want to really look at phytic acid consumption. So, you know, phytic acid, we talked about it, it plunders the phosphorus. We want to soak and ferment gluten-free grains and nuts. We want to stop consuming processed food. We want to remove mercury fillings because they're irritating the guts. And so when we have holes in our guts, our gums, then we're sending pathogens into our bloodstream. And we want to look at things. We want to stop things that are mutating our microbes. So excessive antibiotics, glyphosates, fluoride, triclosan. And then we want to stop using synthetic dental care products, so that why we buy things for our mouth that say may be harmful is swallowed. So we want to eliminate those, like sodium lauryl sulfate, glycerin, artificial sweeteners, trisodium phosphate. I mean, those are all common commercial dental paste ingredients. And then also interesting, xylitol also contains synthetic ingredients, and a two-year study showed zero reduction in cavities with xylitol. And the study that showed it did help cavities was actually funded by the xylitol company. So it may be fine as a sweetener, but it's really no path, like, you know, it's not anything that's going to help you prevent cavities unless, you know, it's helping you eat less sugar in your life. But on an oral level, nothing's happening there. And then seal. So that's the next thing is seal. Bleeding and receding and inflamed gums are a sign of bacterial imbalance and that bacteria may be entering the bloodstream. So we want to restore integrity to our gum tissue, which is called the epithelium. It's the same that's in our intestines. And we want to heal and seal leaky gums. So things for sealing the gums are using botanical serums. These are ingredients that I include in mine, but you can make your own. So soothing serums of sea buckthorn, rosado, frankincense, myrrh, ozonated gel, and you would just massage that onto your gum, and that nurtures the tissue. You want to think about sealing and using alkalinizers like baking soda, sea salt, and magnesium to brush your teeth. And that will also nourish your saliva. And when we have happy alkaline saliva, then it's really helping our mouth ecology. We can swish with things like coconut and essential oils for oil pilling. So you would just take a teaspoon of coconut oil, add a drop of oregano or a dental serum, and then you swish that in your mouth. And that you actually spit. And you try and do that for 15 minutes. And another new way of swishing is swishing with probiotics. You can put that in water with some alkalinizers like salt, and you swish that around daily, and then you that's actually a swish that you would swallow. And then whiteness is obviously on everybody's mind, but we have to know that enamel in the whiteness, it comes from within because enamel is actually transparent. So if we have gray or glassy teeth, it could be that they're lacking the fat-soluble vitamins of D3 and K2. So that's one reason for gray teeth. Another could be like if you've taken an antibiotic or something. Now, sometimes teeth are discolored because it's the plaque that's discolored. So, you know, if you have red wine on a Friday night and you haven't brushed your teeth since the morning, that plaque is getting discolored. So you want to polish. And in the 8 steps, I have good ways of polishing. You can just take a dry, round-headed electric brush. I like the round because it's smaller and it's dry, and you just put on a dash of baking soda, and that gives a very good polishing. I like using a manual brush too. It's all in the 8 steps, but I like the electric for this polishing stage. Now, when we spoke about quorum sensing inhibitors, what we didn't talk about is because of the microbiome and scientists and the medical pharma industry, they're really understanding that we're at a really crisis point of antibiotic resistance. That is a known thing. So scientists, of course, are searching for things to inhibit quorum sensing. And what's really exciting about that, especially for me, is that research reveals that essential oils are very successful inhibitors of quorum sensing and biofilm formation. So we've got various studies that show that essential oils of like cinnamon, cardamom, clove, frankincense, myrrh, neem, oregano, peppermint, rose, tea tree, and thyme, all things that I've been using in our dental care products for over 10 years, they all displayed promising results as quorum sensing inhibitors. And not only did the oils effectively reduce biofilms, they also had the ability to penetrate the pathogenic biofilm barriers that are made, including the ones made by Streptococcus mutans. And so that's so cool because what essential oils, they're kind of like what all of science is wanting right now, because they indicate anti-infective activity that can coexist with our friendly bacteria while cleaning up the periodontal pathogens rather than obliterating all bacteria like an antibiotic. And so what I just love that now we have these scientific studies that confirm the ancient wisdom of using the botanical biotics to maintain oral ecology, because all those essential oils I listed, you know, through different cultures and at different times in history, they have all been used for oral care. And now they're so easy to get and use, and they're so good at massaging into the gums. So that's why people are having good results, you know, when they go to their dentist and they're like, oh, what are you doing? Because, you know, it's not just this like focus on brushing away plaque with things that are hurting the biofilm, I mean, hurting the microbiome. So that's what's really cool about the essential oils. So that's the sealing part. And then we have seed. So with so many things making our microbes extinct, like we discussed, from, you know, cesarean sections to pesticides, we need to think in terms, and this is for really our entire body, including our mouth, we need to build our bacterial bank account and fund it with investments of diverse flora. And really, just like we need to do with the soil and everything, we need to really bring back a bacterial diversity. What studies show is that there's all the bacteria, the trillions, but then there's species of bacteria, right? So our mouth might have 700 different species of bacteria. And what they now are thinking with our guts is that we probably used to have 2,400 species, and now we're down to 1,400 on average. So we've lost about 1,000 species. Wow. So we've got extinction going on in our bodies, not just with, you know, mammals on the planet, that kind of thing. So we want to maintain a microbiome of bustling bacteria. And how we're going to do that is with prebiotics and probiotics, because they are microbe multipliers. So prebiotics, those will feed and enhance the growth of the probiotics. We talked about that with the breast milk and the oligosaccharides. And those oligosaccharides can be found in things like chicory root, which you can just buy as a powdered supplement. And then there's foods that are good in that, like Jerusalem artichokes, leeks, onions. Those all are prebiotic. And then probiotics, which I'm sure everybody's familiar with, are food supplements with living microbes. And they're beneficial when actually used in adequate numbers. So what I like about them is that really you can – you know, you can really go for it if it's needed, because they're a food. There's not like a toxicity level. And so in certain studies, what they found was that lactobacilli, and that's specifically the varieties of lactobacilli, the fermentum, the plantarum, the caseii, the reuteri, and the rhamnosus, those are all lactobacilli species, along with bifidobacterium. And all of those are generally in a very good probiotic. They all show the ability to adhere to saliva, and they inhibited the proliferation of pathogenic oral pathogens. So they were able to inhibit them from growing, and then they're able to reduce cavity-causing bacteria and plaque. So again, it's going back to the balance of the microbiome. And what's neat now is scientists, of course, are looking, well, how can we get those to stay in the mouth longer? So they're trying to invent mouth lozenges, and then those are more expensive than just a capsule. But the thing is, we don't have to wait. We can just use them in our daily diet, because whatever we do to the guts is going to help our mouth. And we can swish, we can implant, and we can increase the probiotic presence in our saliva just from taking the capsules. And then what they're doing is they're experimenting with applying probiotics after a dental scaling and root planting. That's like a classic thing that they do at a, you know, your hygienist visit. And that's called guided pocket recolonization, GPR. And we can do that at home with probiotics. And we have this blunt Vitapick syringes. So it's like it's blunt. And so you can just go along the gum line, and you could administer the serums, the probiotics, all along the gum line. And that's really helpful. Yeah, for gum pockets and just restoring the whole mouth's microbiome. So also you want to include, you know, fermented foods, the fat-soluble vitamins, enzymes. You know, they really help to break down biofilm barriers, and then the minerals we talked about. So what's really neat is that a mouthful of bustling bacteria might actually just keep the dentist away.
Wow. And how long do they have to be exposed? So, for example, if you're skirting it into the pocket, I mean, I know with, like, oil pulling, you're doing it for, like, 10 minutes or 15 minutes. Or are you needing to have the swishing happening and the insertions for long periods of time? Can you put it in one of those, what do they call them, where it's the you have this reservoir of liquid. I forget what you call it. You basically.
Oh yeah, I did. I know. I have a slide. Yeah, so I made this recipe for tooth butter cups, and you can get those things like, which I don't know what they're, dental trays, I think they're called, and you can get it on eBay or Amazon. It's literally like very much like what they would have used for your fluoride treatment. Like they're the shape of your mouth, right? And so, it's a blend. So I have a recipe for these little cubes that you can make, and then you can just have those ready in a jar. You know, keep them in the, you don't have to keep them in the fridge because they're going to go bad, but you can just keep them in the fridge so that they stay solid because coconut oil can get soft at room temperature. And then it's like coconut oil. We'll have the exact recipe. But it's coconut oil, probiotics, a prebiotic of chicory roots and baking soda, some essential oils of peppermint, frankincense. And then you could also add clay or activated charcoal. And then you make them, and you can just pop them in your mouth for swishing, and then you could swallow that. Or you can literally just, you know, pop one of these trays into your mouth and, like, read a book, watch a movie, and let it sink in. And another quick way, again, this is just all, you know, home experimentation. It's not like we have a triple blind study or anything going on. But you could inoculate your pockets with the syringe. And then I would just take the ozone gel that we make or serum and then coat that with oil, with the serum, which is like an oil substance. And then I feel like that will just, and then, you know, you're not going to eat after that or drink, and just kind of let that sit in your mouth as well. Or, you know, before you go to bed, and then you're just, you're not doing anything.
Oh, yeah, then you have it all night. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, which is really good.
Oh, wow. This has been awesome. There's so much. And the 8 steps you said will be outlined if they go. Tell me exactly how people can get those 8 steps. Where on your website?
So it's on our site. I believe the section is called Body Care Articles. And then we have, you know, beauty, and then you'll see the dental section, which is healthy gums and teeth. And then there's, like, I think 4 or 5 articles there. Then there's my book, which is also on the site or on Amazon. And then, you know, a lot of stuff we talked today is, like, very leading-edge information, because a lot of the stuff on the microbiome is new. And so a lot of that information is going to be on the slides.
Awesome. Oh, man, this has been just delightful. This is so full of, chock full of information, and, you know, people are feeling, you know, like we really have to sit down and take it in and listen to this again, make sure you take good notes, and just come up with a few things to start. You're not going to obviously do all of this right away, and just find a starting place and see where you're at, evaluate your mouth and see where you're at. And if you need some work done, certainly pursue a good dentist. You can go to the Hal Huggins website, and they can tell you where their trained people are. If you're in Texas, you're lucky. I have the guy, not only is 45 minutes away from me, so I'm going to be making a visit to him. Visit Nadine's site, livinglibations.com, and take a look at the articles and get her book. Her book is well worth it. And you'll have all this laid out, but a lot of this stuff we have here today is not in the book yet, is what I'm understanding, is that it, because it's cutting-edge new stuff.
Mm-hmm. The stuff, like, there's a bit on the microbiome in the book, but there's a lot on the dentineal lymph fluid in the book, but this is new. Yeah. And I just wanted to add, I think that the, like, quick, easy way to start is definitely probiotics in your life.
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
And I would say, you know, I do make many fancy dental products, but seriously, if you just stop all commercial stuff and get yourself some baking soda and sea salt, that is enough. You know, that will be, and that you may even have in your kitchen right now. So it's not like you need to get all my fancy dental things. That will give you an extra edge, but the transition from commercial to just baking soda is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. I had one last question that came up when you were saying about the polishing. Somebody told me about using a polish where you add turmeric to that. Have you seen any evidence that that works?
Yeah, you know, I haven't tried that myself. I just feel like the staining could be, for some people, if they already have a plaque buildup, they might have a yellowing.
Yeah.
Charcoal's good, though. Charcoal doesn't stain in the same way. And brushing, you know, you could do baking soda charcoal and, like, clay. That's awesome.
Clay, I was going to say,
bentonite clay is awesome.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for taking time out of your busy day and your busy schedule, and helping us to see what we can do for our mouths. This is just eye-opening, and making that connection between the body health and the mouth health is so critical. And a lot of times we just kind of, you know, yeah, we floss and brush, and we think we're okay, we think we're protected, and then go about our business. And this just really helps to take this to a new dimension. So thank you, Nadine.
Thank you.
So we've been
thank
speaking
you.
With Nadine
pleasure.
Arnaz. It's been my pleasure. And go to her site, livinglibations.com, and check out her resources there. And really just go out and have a great day and take care of your teeth. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.